listening to the second hour of We the People Radio. You can find everything about the program at wethepeopleradio.us. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff. And our sponsor this hour is Team Power, a John Deere Kubota dealer in Shasta Lake, California. Everything John Deere and Kubota, you can get it there. They're at 3119 Twin View Boulevard, and you can reach them at 226-9226. Get a great deal on a tractor, get service work, and find them on the web at readingtractors.com.
Ta-da!
There you go.
Look at that. Not even a blunder.
No.
We were quick, in and out, because this hour, chock full of information. We're going to run out of time. So our guest is Dr. Harry Booyans. He's an internationally recognized, multiple award-winning, say that three times fast, PhD defense and aerospace physicist. Obviously knows lots of things we don't know anything about. He is originally from South Africa with a 360-year bloodline in that country. He lives with his family on the forested slopes outside Vancouver, Canada, and his life as a scientist exposed him to many of the realities of the Cold War in the period immediately following the fall of the Berlin Wall that we were just discussing in the previous hour, oddly enough. It included interaction with the United States and the British defense establishment. He applies his lifetime of research and interpretive skills to history and genealogy and writes with factual accuracy and engaging style on these subjects. Hard evidence is a trademark of his work, and it's won him a number of awards. He focuses on making Americans aware of what is happening in South Africa, the historic parallels between our two countries of the United States and South Africa, and the warning that South Africa holds for Western civilization in general, and the United States in particular. I really, really hope that you share this with other people, because I guarantee you, you know nothing about what's going on in South Africa.
Nope, you're not hearing anything on the mainstream media about it.
This will be very much like the shows we did some years back on Libya. And people really loved them. We found some people who really knew what was going on the ground and came and told us about that. We've also posted all sorts of great stuff that Dr. Booyans has sent us. And one of the I have not been able to read it yet, but the Great Obama Reversal. It's his view over the Obama years. Very interesting. What little we discussed last night in our 3-hour high. Could you come on the radio chat? Our quick little chat. I think you'll find it fascinating. So, without further ado, how's your afternoon going?
Oh, hi, Aaron.
I thought I'd get through all that exhausting stuff.
Thank you very much for that. It's nice to be on your show.
Well, thank you for coming on.
This is
my pleasure.
This is one of those things that you really have to have somebody who, you know, who knows and can demystify it. And actually, I'm going to say 99% of the people listening to this have been lied to for years about what's going on in South Africa.
Well,
that's my comment.
Usually when I hear the word South Africa and lie in the same sentence, it's a cue for me to say something. Did I get that right?
Yeah, I just, you know, it's interesting because it's amazing that this all could be really packaged differently, sold differently. But you have a really a cool perspective, and so however you would like to get us into this, we'll just follow along.
Well, let me, maybe I should introduce this at the point where I actually got into this. Yes, I was born in South Africa. Yes, I grew up there, left there at the age of 47, settled in Canada, and been working at companies like Kodak and so forth in Canada. And so one day in 2006, it was quite clear to me that our son would have to get a cochlear implant because he was born hard of hearing. And we made that decision over here to go ahead with this lot. And so I joined a forum on a website it was an American website, and to learn more about how all of this works. And these folks were discussing absolutely anything and everything. And one day when I heard for the manyth time about farm murders in South Africa, I said on that forum that things are out of hand down there, and sometime or other decent people are going to have to react. And so folks asked me about that, and I started explaining. And then a person from the Netherlands posted a little line that said, "Yes, Harry, but you should tell them what happened before," implying that there is some sort of justification for farmers being tortured to death just because they're white. And to the everlasting credit of the Americans on the website, they reacted pretty much as one human being and said nothing justifies this. And, you know, I thanked them for that and said, well, you know, thank you terribly much for that, but maybe our Dutch friend is correct, and I should start and tell you what went before. But can I please start at the beginning?
Sure.
Oh, sure.
And they said yes, and my comment was, well, that's going to take a while, because I would have to start the story in about 1652. And I would have to explain what went before, since Holland was involved in that, as pointed out by my Dutch friend. So I wrote what in the end became an 80-page treatise, screed, doorstop, whatever. I wrote this thing in parts, and I posted a section sort of once a night or once every 3 nights. And after a while, folks got hold of me from this website and said, but Harry, where's the book that you're getting all the stuff from? And I told them, no, there's no book. It's just the history as I learned it. And as a science guy, I tend to look for evidence. So I just dug up the stuff as I went through my life. And they said, well, if there's no book, pal, you had better make a plan. Okay, so the impetus for my involvement on the subject and my writing of this book that is torturing my life, it's called Amabulu, all of that actually came from the United States because decent people there got outraged. And so I... some of them eventually put this together as one entire document. So eventually I hung this 80-page PDF document on the internet, and then people really started reading it. And so I was approached to, you know, can I please turn this into a book so people can read it properly and so forth? And so I said, look, guys, I'm a scientist. I got a day job. I really don't want to be writing books. That's not who I am. That's not what I'm about. And though book writing runs in the family, I didn't particularly want to do that. You know, I write patents for a living. I got work to do and a family to feed. But people didn't let up. So when one more time a idiot here in Canada mouthed off about how it is justified that farmers should be murdered in South Africa, I could take it not one inch further. And that was the day that I went down to my family, told them, I am now going to start writing. And I wrote the sort of intro phrases of the book, walked downstairs again, put it in front of my wife, who, you know, naturally is my worst critic on earth.
Amen, brother.
You know what I'm talking about. So I gave it to the worst possible critic on earth. She took a look at this and looked at me with huge, big saucer-shaped eyes, and she said, did you write this? You know, so obviously my dearly beloved was in total shock that I'd put together something that actually sounded almost like it could be read. And that's where it started. And it was at that point, this stuff had been hanging around for a year, and I'd started writing that day. And that day was around this time in 2007. It took me until November 2013 to finish this thing. So all in all, a slice of my life equal to 7 years. I, in fact, went to 7 countries over that period to get information, and I dug through archives and things, because the history of country A is often found in the archives of country B. In this case, the information was spread over places like New York in the United States, and Copenhagen in Denmark, and The Hague in Holland, and odd truly little villages along the Rhine in Germany, tiny little villages in France, some information from Indonesia, and of course some from the Cape of Good Hope. And then there's the British archives, where I physically went and sat down and went through all this stuff. So in the end, what happened was this book, and it was precipitated by Americans getting outraged about what is happening in South Africa. But lo and behold, not a peep out of the regular media. Nothing.
Big shock. Nothing. They were really busy with other things, really important things, I'm sure.
Yeah, I'm sure they were preparing to nail President Trump. They just didn't know it yet.
they just didn't know. They were waiting for Russia, Russia, Russia. We have to take a really quick break, and we will come back with our guest, Dr. Harry Bouyans. His book is spelled, just for those of you that maybe are not online, it's AMABHULU. And the subtitle is The Birth and Death of the Second America. And his last name is, I guess I should spell that too, as long as we're doing spelling. His last name is spelled Bouyans, so that you can search that or find the book. I have links on our site to the Amazon and all that and the online book for you. You can get that at wethepeopleradio.us along with his blog and all that good stuff. We will be right back in 2 seconds.
Who's to say? I can't do everything, but I can try. And as I roll along, I begin to find things aren't always just what they seem. I wanna turn the whole thing upside down. I'll find the things they say just can't be found. I'll share this love I've made all my friends. We're all misunderstood. They say we stand for nothing, and there's no way we ever could. Now we see everything that's going wrong with the world and those who lead it. We just feel like we don't have the means to rise above and beat it. So we keep waiting, waiting, waiting on the world to change. We keep on waiting, waiting, waiting on the world to change.
We're trying to help the world change a little bit, getting some information out there. Okay. Back to the story.
I was thinking, Aaron, that since I heard one of your intro commercials there had something to do with John Deere, I should point out that when you look at the farmers in South Africa and the central wheat and corn growing part of the country, kind of the same guys as what you see in the States, and you know, they drive the same John Deere's. They speak English with a slightly different accent, but they're in church every Sunday morning and once a month at communion. You know, it's the same guys. If you go and speak to them, you're going to hear it's the same issues. They're worried about whether they're going to have the money for the seed for next year. They're going to worry about whether there's going to be enough rain. There's going to be a prayer day for rain. I don't think it's that much different from the U.S.
No.
And so you might well ask, why do I focus so intently on the United States? And I actually published a little article on that, and it raises a couple of points in that area. And the one is that the U.S. is the only country in the world of 2018 that can and might cause the ANC government of South Africa enough political and economic pain to change its direction and to stop its low-level genocide campaign against white people based on their skin color. Secondly, you know, right now the U.S. has a president in Mr. Donald Trump with the guts to do the right thing, and his rather fractious Congress is not in control of foreign policy. He is. Okay, I know that Congress overruled Reagan. Everybody says Reagan, these days they say he was a saint. Somebody needs to explain to me why Congress overruled him in 1986 when it insisted on applying sanctions against South Africa. And he said, please don't. You don't know what's going on. Don't do that. And they ignored him. I also wrote that I believe that our joint bloodline, extraordinarily similar histories, the respective dealings with the British, similar experience with the Dutch, the cultural histories as frontier nations on the outer edges of Western civilization, the Afrikaner is the post office issue American's closest cousin, down to the guns, Bibles, and John Deere tractors and cut the crap attitude, including praise the Lord and pass the ammo.
Mm-hmm. South Africa, we were kind of chuckling on the phone last night. They're the embodiment of our flyover states.
Yeah, very much. I agree. I guess the as I say, the post office issue Afrikaner would see himself as a occupant of the flyover states of the U.S. And my last point is, I just simply fundamentally trust the basic value system of the ordinary American. I know Churchill kind of said that one can always count on the Americans to do the right thing after they've tried everything else. But it suggests that if I hang in there long enough, they'll eventually settle on doing the proper, decent, humane thing. Okay? I put it on paper. They are just fundamentally more humane than any other powerful nation out there, no matter what the Europeans try to tell you, and fundamentally they have the appropriate combination of heart and guts. Now, don't let it go to your heads totally, but that's how I feel about the United States.
We have the potential, how's that, if we live up to it?
Okay, so that's, you know, I have been asked why my total focus on the U.S., and that's it. The matters happening in South Africa are getting attention in the Belgian parliament. I can just see, you know, hordes of C-130s with Belgian paratroopers heading for South Africa, right?
Not.
Yeah, earth-shaking.
Yeah, and our old ancestors, the Dutch, you know, when they can finally rest themselves from their devout liberalism, they might one day look up and realize what's actually happened. So as for Britain, that's the country that put us in concentration camps. We're not easily going to believe that they're the solution.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm sorry, I let slip one of the sort of key points there. I wrote down here a couple of like 7 points that I think Americans in general don't know, and one of them is that concentration camps were invented largely in South Africa by the British for us. The Germans were not the inventors thereof.
And that was 1901?
1901.
And that was for the Dutch?
I'm going to have to explain at some point in these few minutes we have that we talk about, you know, just like the Germans and the Dutch and the Belgians and the Danes and all those people would use the word Amerikaner to describe Americans. So you would be Amerikaners. In the same way, Afrikaners are the guys who settled in South Africa and eventually swore loyalty to Africa rather than their countries of origin. Suggesting that Afrikaners should go back to Europe is like, you know, even in the time of Davy Crockett suggesting he go back to England, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You get the feeling.
Yes, yeah. Because the Dutch originally went to South Africa when?
1652 they arrived there.
See, I don't know if most people realize that.
Yeah, and what they settled was basically a wasteland, wasn't it?
Well, there was no development. There was no established civilization as such. I think the major point here is that I swear to you that every regular American and Canadian I met was totally, utterly, and wholly convinced that there were black people on the beach at Cape Town when the Dutch arrived. It's simply a flat-out lie. In fact, the nearest black people were 700 miles away. I reckon just, you know, with my bit of knowledge of the map, I figure that's about as far as Tucson, Arizona, from where you guys are.
And why was that? Why wasn't there an indigenous population at that time in that area?
There was an indigenous population. They weren't black. People seem to think that all of Africa is black, and it's not. Hmm. Far northern Africa is not black. Okay, the Tuaregs are, well, let me put it this way. The people along the south coast of the Mediterranean, they're not black people.
Mm-hmm.
They're more close to the Arabs. In fact, the Somalis that your folks ran into, they may have black skins, but you try and tell them that they are black Africans, they're going to get really annoyed at you. Okay. And in the same way, the original inhabitants of the southern tip of Africa, most of it, in fact, was the so-called San people, S-A-N. Those were formerly known as the Bushmen, and they were pygmy people, small people, very small. And along with them, their related cousins, who were formerly called Hottentot, these days the correct name for them is Khoi. And the two groups together are known as the Khoi San, with a hyphen in between. And so the people who were at the southern tip of Africa were the Khoi San. It wasn't the black Bantu people of Africa. They were the invaders.
No kidding.
So you ask the people who can trace their DNA to the Cape, and they will tell you that the black people are the invaders. And let me put it to you this way. It's not as though I have to bring you statistical data or stuff from archives to prove this. If you go east along the coast from Cape Town, and you go up towards the subtropical coast, hundreds and hundreds of miles away, you'll find that the rivers have Khoisan names. They don't have names generated in the language of Mandela or any of those black people. The names of the rivers are Khoisan names.
I'll be darned. I didn't know that.
So the people who were there when the Dutch arrived were the Khoi people. And they're a completely different human race. Completely different.
So when the Dutch arrived, I mean, did they basically get along?
Well, let me see if I can find this little bit here. Where is this bit? I just have to... Yeah, here we go. This is the instruction to the original Dutch commander from the actual archives. A good understanding with the natives will be necessary in order to make them, in course of time, accustomed to intercourse with you and so attract them. In this, great prudence is necessary. And you shall have to take especial care not to injure their cattle, which they are herding or bringing on, as this would repel them from us. Does that sound like slavery or anything like that to you, or fighting?
Yeah, it didn't really sound like a big takeover.
Yeah, okay.
It was a pretty light takeover plan. We have to take a quick break before we delve into this, and we'll be right back. Just a really swift break. You can find us online at wethepeopleradio.us. Our guest is Dr. Harry Booyans. You guys are going to like this show. We've got lots of information for you. Be right back.
Something happening here, but what it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there, telling me I got to beware. I think it's time we stop, children. What's that sound? Everybody look what's going down.
There you go. You know, a lot of people don't realize, but commerce between Americas and the Dutch go way, way back. And a little known fact is our Declaration of Independence was actually, the paper was actually milled by the Dutch and printed on Dutch paper. So there you go.
Well, there you have it.
Another...
That I did not know.
Yes, that's a little Dutch fact there.
I could possibly tell you another useful bit. You do know that some of the Pilgrim Fathers actually departed not from England, but from Holland.
There you go.
Huh.
So So that was an expatriate community that felt unsafe in England and moved to Holland, where they stayed as a community and then made their deal, so that a whole horde of them actually came from Holland. They sailed from Holland and then got laid up in the British harbors, where they lost one of the ships, and then they proceeded on with the Mayflower. So, yeah, the link goes much further. But the thing, though, is that New York was started by the Dutch, known as New Amsterdam. Cape Town was started by the Dutch about 50 years later. Both places were ultimately stolen by the British. The Brits sailed into New Amsterdam in 1664. What do you know? Living in town at the time was my wife's ancestors. She's not an American. She's a typical South African girl. But her first, one of her earliest ancestors is actually the first American immigrant to South Africa in 1666.
I'll be darned.
Wow. And they lived in what would now be the shadow of the Goldman Sachs building.
No kidding.
Wow.
There are such beautiful, detailed maps available of the era that I've actually pinned down the location of their house. I could walk you there right now. It's on Stone Street in New York. The house is gone. I think it now is 7-Eleven.
Of course.
It's still, I think, the last cobblestone road in New York. It's still Stone Street. And that's where they lived. And when the Brits took the place in 1664, the family went back to Holland. They disappear. And the next moment, the two sisters, the two daughters, appear at the Cape of Good Hope as orphans.
Wow.
Yeah, and pretty much.
That's my family American line.
Yeah, pretty much. Back in those days, pretty much everybody got whooped up on by the British. They were the power to be reckoned with.
Sure.
And I don't know a lot about the history of the Cape, though. That was continue on with your story.
Yeah. Well, eventually in the 1680s, the Dutch, having beaten the Brits at that point, decided to sell New York in exchange for one of the islands somewhere. I can't remember which. So they didn't think New York was worth much.
No, lousy location.
Here, take
so
it.
Much for their judgment, right? An interesting little point there is that Peter Minuit, who had preceded Peter Stuyvesant as the mayor there, like my wife's other ancestor, also basically French Protestant who went to fight in the religious wars in Germany. I think all of them came from the German town called Wesel. So they'd fought there. Hmm. So there's a lot of these odd little links. And here's the thing. If I decode the word Amabulu view for a second, I'll point out something else that's interesting. The Ama in front of the word, Amabulu, the title of this book, Ama is the suffix that's used in many of the black languages in South Africa to mean people or people of or the something people. So, for example, the Amabenzi these days are those people who are rich enough to own Mercedes Benzes. They call them Amabenzi.
No kidding.
Oh, wow.
So you get the idea.
Yeah.
You put Ama in front and then the descriptive word. So way back in the late 1700s, when the black people first ran into the white guys, all the white guys they found were farmers. Now, the word for farmer in Dutch is boer, B-O-E-R, boer. But that soft R at the end, they could not pronounce, and you would struggle with it as well. So they, instead of saying boer, they said boulou. They put a lu at the end, because that's more in tune with their language. Very, very, I don't know what's the word, soundful language. It's mm-hmm. actually, full of clear, ringing sounds, the Khoisa language in particular. And so instead of talking about boer for a farmer, they said bulu. Sorry.
Bless
so
you.
If you're going to talk about the farmer people, you're going to call them the Amabulu. So I am a member of a nation that they would refer to as the Amabulu.
Okay.
More generally known in international terms as the Afrikaner. They proceeded because all the white people they knew were kind of farmers at that point, frontier farmers. So anyone white just became Amabulu. Now, here's the truth, but I have a piece of text from the archives in New York where a British officer in the late 1680s is losing his cool and reporting on what he refers to as these these darned boos in upstate New York. So your own ancestors were also called Boer. So you are also Amabulu.
Another connection, yeah.
So you don't know it, but you're Amabulu. Amabulu. Okay? So that's where this comes from. You might ask me, why is the subtitle of this thing The Birth and Death of the Second America? Well, in about 1795, the Brits invaded the Cape and stole it, basically, just like they'd done with New York. But no one was powerful enough to drive them out of there, so no luck in getting rid of them. So about 2 years later, the commander of the Navy at the Cape, who happened to be the boss of the later famous Nelson, Admiral Pringle. Admiral Pringle went on record, and I don't have his exact words in front of me right now, but it's something to the effect that they should not really, help this place to expand, because as it got bigger and richer, it would no doubt in time steal, quote, steal India from us. They had had such a horrific experience with losing America that they weren't going to repeat this. This is why they made hostilities broke out with France in 1795, they made a beeline for the Cape and made sure this time they took it. And the reason for that is simple. In your War of Independence, the Brits and the French both raced for Cape Town because whoever controlled it controlled the oceans. And the French, the Brits sailed first, and they got to one of the islands along the way. And when the French arrived, the Brits were very occupied in the brothels in town. So the French shot the hell out of the British Navy and proceeded to Cape Town and landed their soldiers there in agreement with the Dutch. That freed up the French Navy to do what they wanted on the high seas, and that is why they could support the Americans against the Brits in your War of Independence. So if it weren't for that race for the Cape, you may not have had a United States.
No, we definitely needed the help of the French.
Okay, so that's yet another connection. But some of the other so the point is that he said this place might, Pringle said that the Cape might very well in time turn into a second America and steal India from us. Therefore, they, the Brits, should be careful not to let this place be too successful. Thank you very much.
That's
so
interesting.
Now you know what would have happened to the United States if you had stayed a British colony. You can take a look at South Africa today. That's probably what would have happened to you. So I think you should go on your knees and thank Washington and those guys one more time, because what I have to live and what I have to see happen to my family is what had been happening to you if you had not got rid of the Brits.
God, and at the end of the day, you wouldn't wish that on your worst enemy.
So the other thing let me put it this way. In 1979, a bright-eyed and bushy-tailed Harry arrived in New York. I'd been given a one-year postdoctorate exercise at IBM. So I was going to spend a year at IBM. And I had to go look for a place to stay. So everybody at IBM was awfully nice, helped left, right, and center, gave me a list of places I could phone where they knew people were advertising homes and rooms and whatever. So I phoned up a first place, and that was taken, phoned up a second place, similar story, got to the third one, and a very nice lady answered. And I remember this is around, it's not too far from Hillary Clinton's home, so Mount Kisco. Chappaqua is the next town down. So I'm phoning this lady, and it all goes very well, and then finally her voice turns conspiratorial. And she says, Harry, can I ask you a question? I said, sure, ma'am. And she says, are you black? And I told her, no, ma'am, I'm white as the driven snow. Is that a problem? You know. And that's when I realized that things are not simple in the U.S. You guys still there?
Yeah, sorry, we have an emergency thing coming in, just making a bunch of noise, so we muted ourselves so we wouldn't be making sound. Sorry, I'm sure you felt like you were hello?
Okay. So I realized that the history of the U.S. is no doubt going to be devil South Africa is something terrible. And the reason why I say that is that I realize that so much of the discourse in the United States is based on the history of slavery in the U.S. And that much of the behavior is still today dictated by that. And folks don't seem to realize in the United States that no South African indigenous black people were ever enslaved by any white people from anywhere on earth.
And see, that I think is the big misunderstanding, is that the whites went down, took over all this black area, and now they're having it taken away from them, which is totally false. But
yeah, so people in Europe jump all over us on that subject. They're looking for us behind the door where they themselves are standing.
Right, right. Let's take a break, and when we come back, I want to stay on that vein a little bit, because that is, I think, the crux of why
there's no support, there's no understanding.
Support. Exactly.
Well, and then there's the media lying. We should definitely highlight that. We'll be right back with our guest, Dr. Harry Buyans. His book, Amabulu, you can find all of that on our site at wethepeopleradio.us. Be right back.
Slow parade of fears without crying. Now I want to understand. I have done all that I could to see the evil and the good without hiding. You must help me if you can. Doctor, my eyes.
And we're back with our guest, Dr. Harry Buyans. All right, so Bill, you had something. What was it?
Yeah, I raised the point that folks need to understand that if liberal folks the world over are wallowing in a pool of self-pity and regret and desperation, worried about the fact that their ancestors practiced slavery and that they enslaved black people from Africa, I just need to tell them that, excuse me, guys, but we, white South Africans, never enslaved the black people in South Africa. Okay? Just thought you should know. Please?
Little FYI.
You know, so we don't understand that thing. So when, as a 25-year-old, I ended up in New York and I started getting some of these strange comments and things, I realized, oh, good heavens, these people are confused about who we are and what we are. We have no background on this stuff. We don't know this. We don't, as South Africans, we're just going ahead as ordinary Christian folks. We have, yeah, we're conservative. You know, like I said, you know, talk to me about Bibles and guns. But this stuff about enslaving the locals, where on earth does this come from? And so that is what precipitated me into starting to research the origin of some of this stuff. And I don't think we have time today to go into that, but I can tell you this. It arrived on the back of a guy called Johannes van der Kemp, who was a Dutchman in the employ of a British missionary society. He arrived at the Cape in 1800, and that big, massive lie started with him. He is the source of it, and the Brits never let go. It is difficult to find an article on the internet today that does not accuse my people of enslaving black Africans. And it just simply did not happen.
Well, that's good. And
it's a classic case of if you tell a lie enough times,
exactly,
it becomes the truth.
Exactly.
Just make it big enough. And as I told Aaron last night, always, always remember, Lenin was a newspaper man.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And oddly enough, in the first ever issue of his newspaper, Iskra, what did he go on about? The Afrikaners in South Africa. But at that time, he was on our side because he was against the Brits. Mm. Anyway, so and here, well, is the ironic part of it. You know who's got the slave ancestors? I do. The white folks have the slave ancestors. The black folks don't know this subject at all. The only black South Africans who were ever enslaved were in fact enslaved by Nelson Mandela's causas. They were called the Amafengu, the beggar people, the ones who had fled from the Zulu. They were Zulu-speaking Zulus who had to flee. And for all their misery, they got made slaves by the Amakosa, Mandela's people. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So it's not even a case of the pot calling the kettle black. I don't even know what proverb applies to this complete inversion of the truth. As I sit here, I am the descendant of an Indian slave in the employ of the Dutch East India Company, who arrived at the Cape in 1657. In fact, she arrived before my first white ancestor at the Cape. Her name was Great Catherine, and she became a washerwoman at the Cape settlement, in the household of the Cape commander. My wife, who was a typical South African girl, her earliest ancestor is also a slave who was on the same ship, also from Batavia in Indonesia, also Indian, and she became a wet nurse for the commander's family. The end result is both she and I had an Indian-descended slave from Indonesia in the commander's household, okay? And I have to sit and listen to these people go on about slavery? There is something just profoundly sick here.
Yeah, I know it's a fact, but it's a forgotten fact that the people of Africa, more African, black Africans were enslaved by blacks than were ever enslaved, even from any other country. In fact, most of the slave traders of the day were black. They were
black and Arabs, yeah.
Yeah, and they rounded them up and sold them off. I mean, they were the slave traders.
Yeah, so. Yeah, and I thank people like the Swedes who get on the high horse these days and plead like their hands could never, never have trouble on their hands. They had a perfectly, thoroughly functioning slave center in West Africa called Carolusburg. So don't let the Swedes get away with.
Clean hands.
Yeah, I don't know even what to know. They just irritate me.
Damn Swedes.
The fundamental problem here is that the Afrikaner as a white man in Africa has no voice in the world. He's never had a voice in the world. As early as 1834, British missionaries were taking African chiefs to London to go and plead the case of the black people. No one of my people ever had a chance to plead their case anywhere in the corridors of power, anywhere on earth. We just had to be, we were the cannon fodder. We were just abused all the time, okay? Until the Brits finally put us in concentration camps and then lambasted the Germans for doing the same.
Right.
There's these oddities, you know, like actually the white folks in South Africa did not enslave South African black people, but South African black people enslaved black people. And then, in the worst irony of all, it's actually the white people in South Africa who have the slave ancestors, and I'm a very good example of that. I got a couple of those in my tree. And yes, you know, like everybody else on Earth, we have the obligatory, as I put it to Aaron, we have the obligatory Italian deserter who deserted from Napoleon's army to join the British army and then ended up at the Cape, took discharge, and became a good Afrikaner. Okay? So there's just all these things that are just seriously weird. But when you get down to these black politicians who are now dancing on stages and singing songs with the lyrics, kill the whites, kill the farmer, kill the white, and phrases like, we stole the land, the farmer stole the land, drive them off the farms. Well, white Afrikaners like myself were living and dying in the heart of the prairie states of South Africa when Western man did not even yet know about the existence of that politician's ancestors much further north. Mm-hmm. How can people allow this travesty of, you know, to go on? The truth is there to find. This is not a piece of mystical stuff, you know. It turns out that one has to work to get the truth. And it's because the truth is tough to figure out. It's probably the reason CNN is still in existence.
Yeah, they make a very profitable business out of missing out on the truth.
They're doing such a great job that today their CNN correspondent April Ryan tweeted out some article about Donald Trump running a child trafficking ring.
Yeah, I'm sure that's true.
This is the quality of reporting that's mm-hmm. coming out of CNN.
Well, I think you hit it on the head when you said that the Africana, they have no political voice, and today the loudest voice is the what are they called, the Mandela group, the
ANC.
ANC.
African National Congress.
There you go. They have the voice. And
and that fits in nicely with the Black Lives Matter and all the rest rest of the victimology that's going on. And
well, and the problem ultimately is if you think you are free of this, let me point out something to you. President Obama appointed Richard Stengel as Undersecretary of State for Public Diplomacy and Public Affairs. Richard Stengel is none other than the ghostwriter of Nelson Mandela's autobiography. Okay? And the State Department said, here's his job definition, leading America's public diplomacy outreach, which includes communications with international audiences, cultural programming, academic grants, educational exchanges, international visitor programs, and U.S. government efforts to confront ideological support for terrorism. But he writes the book for the man, Mandela, in which Mandela says, if sabotage did not produce the results we wanted, we were prepared to move on to the next stage, guerrilla warfare and terrorism. And then he explains how we went to Ethiopia for bomb training. So this is the man that Obama appoints to confront ideological support for terrorism?
Yeah.
Yeah, no.
Somebody going to explain this to me?
Yeah. No.
You know what? We're going to have you back next week.
Yep.
And next week
we get into the farmers.
Yeah, we want to get into what's happening down there because it is an atrocity that has to be told. And I think we've kind of laid the groundwork today.
Yeah, and that was my point.
And thank you very much for coming on.
Thank you so much. Our guest has been Dr. Harry Bouyans.
Thank you very much for having me.
Absolutely. We will see you next week, and I hope people will hit the website. It's wethepeopleradio.us. We have all the information on there, and we'll keep you up to date with what's happening next week.